The SS officer unfastened the catch on his holster and slowly drew a black pistol with one gloved hand. With a metallic click, he cocked the weapon and then levelled it at the head of the old man who knelt on the floor of the railway carriage. It was the night of the 7th of February, 1942, and the SS officer was about to commit a cold-blooded execution. The day before, the train had pulled out of Vienna's main station, packed with a consignment of Austrian Jews who were being deported to the Riga ghetto in Latvia. The commander of the train was SS Hauptsturmführer Dr. Alois Brunner, a close confidant of the officer charged by Himmler with implementing the Holocaust across Europe, Adolf Eichmann. Brunner had quickly earned a reputation for brutal efficiency, and throughout early 1942 he had purged huge numbers of Jews from all across his home nation of Austria, consigning most of them to death within the concentration camp system. The man who was chained to the floor of the railway carriage like an animal, dressed only in pyjamas, even though the weather was extremely cold, had formerly been one of the most prominent citizens of Vienna. Sigmund Bosel, a financier, had founded the newspaper Der Tag. Brunner, for reasons known only to him, had decided that this old man deserved some special attention, and for some hours he had harangued and berated the terrified Bosel as the train rattled along the rails towards the northwest. Bosel, who was ill, had begged Brunner to spare him and to show some mercy. But Brunner, who was a rabid anti-Semite, had ignored all entreaties from Bosel. In the adjoining carriage, the Jews could hear some of what was happening to Bosel, recalled a witness, Gertruda Schneider. Brunner pointed his pistol at Bosel's head and pulled the trigger. In the adjoining car, the Jews all jumped at the shot, which was deafeningly loud above the chugging of the steam locomotive and the squeal and rattle of the wheels on the rails. People muttered quietly and held their loved ones close. Suddenly, the door connecting the two carriages was wrenched open, and Brunner stepped in. The smell of cordite wafted into the carriage as Brunner entered, and there were spatters of blood across the bottom of his greatcoat. The prisoner's fearful eyes looked at their tormentor, the death's head badge on his field-grey cap gleaming in the poor light, his black jackboots loud on the wooden floor as he paced about, his dead brown eyes casting about in all directions, like a shark on the hunt. Brunner asked ominously whether anyone had heard anything. After being assured that no one had, recalled Schneider, he seemed satisfied and left. Given that SS Hauptsturmführer Dr. Alois Brunner was such a rabid anti-Semite, it was perhaps peculiar that he did not look particularly Aryan. In fact, he looked slightly Jewish. Georges Dunant, a Red Cross official who met Brunner in Slovakia, was struck by how non-Aryan the infamous SS officer appeared. "It's with these features and manners that Brunner gives me a course in racism," he reflected. But in his chest beat the black heart of a passionate anti-Semite, a man described by his own deputy when he was hauled before the Nuremberg trials as a Schweinhund, an extremely unscrupulous individual. Brunner's victims variously described the young SS captain as a dark nightmare and a mad sadist. The famous Nazi hunter, Simon Wiesenthal, has described Brunner's prominent place in the machinery of the Final Solution. Among Third Reich criminals, Alois Brunner is undoubtedly the worst. In my eyes, he was the worst ever. While Adolf Eichmann drew up the general staff plan for the extermination of the Jews, Alois Brunner implemented it. The portrait of Brunner as a sadistic and ruthless tool of the SS extermination machine has not only been borne out by the testimonies of surviving witnesses, but even by a proud Brunner himself. Unlike so many fugitive Nazis, who vainly attempted to prove that they did not commit any crimes, or that they were simply following orders, Brunner remained extremely vocal regarding his work disposing, as he said, of 136,500 Jews. In November 1987, the Chicago Sun-Times recorded a short telephone statement from Brunner, who was then in hiding in Damascus, Syria. Asked whether he regretted his actions against the Jews, Brunner replied, quote, All of them deserved to die because they were the devil's agents and human garbage. I have no regrets and would do it again. Unquote. It is for this reason that Dr. Alois Brunner was still the number one most wanted Nazi fugitive as recently as 2010. Brunner was born on the 8th of April 1912 in what was then called Nadkut in the German-speaking western part of Austria-Hungary, now Ruhrbrunn, Austria. He joined the then illegal Austrian Nazi Party in 1931 at the age of only 19. After the Anschluss, he joined the SS. Brunner's rise through the ranks was quite fast, and he was soon identified as possessing extremely strong anti-Semitic opinions, and these brought him to Adolf Eichmann's attention. Appointed personal secretary to the architect of the Holocaust, Eichmann sent Brunner to Vienna to head the Jewish Affairs Office before the war, where he was tasked with leading a campaign against the Jews, forcing many to flee abroad. From November 1939 until September 1944, Brunner was one of the busiest war criminals in Europe, where he organized the deportation of 47,000 Jews from Vienna, organized mass roundups in Berlin, deported the entire Jewish population of Salonika, Greece, to concentration camps, a total of 43,000 people, and was commandant of Drancy internment camp outside Paris between June 1943 and September 1944. Whilst at Drancy, Brunner deported 23,500 men, women and children to Auschwitz, where most of them perished. And then at the end of the war, Brunner simply disappeared into thin air. It has subsequently been established that Brunner escaped from Europe down a rat line bound for the Middle East, where many believed he was still alive until recently, protected by powerful friends. Syria is a small country in the Middle East and has been ruled since independence from France by the al-Assad family. In 1998, a French judge stated that Alois Brunner was definitely hiding out in Syria under the protection of the Assad family. President Assad was quick to retort, somewhat sarcastically, quote, "I wonder how I, who am in Syria, did not know where he, Brunner, is, while the French judge knows his whereabouts." Unquote. The problem for those who tried to bring Brunner to justice in the period between his fleeing Europe in the 1950s and almost to the present day have not been in locating where he was, but in trying to convince the Syrian authorities that their guest should be extradited to stand trial for his crimes. Syria benefited from giving Alois Brunner sanctuary, and as we shall see, Brunner remained close to the Syrian intelligence community and the presidential family for decades. In return for his services rendered, Brunner was able to live comfortably in Damascus, where he was perhaps the one Nazi fugitive whose lifestyle fitted with the myth perpetrated by such films as The Odessa File and The Boys from Brazil. Brunner was said to have been protected around the clock by a team of armed Syrian secret service agents who ensured that the old Nazi was able to enjoy his twilight years without fear of assassination or kidnap. Syria was to prove to be a nation where Israel's Nazi hunters and the Mossad intelligence service found it extremely precarious to operate, reflecting the region's deep-seated and long history of conflict between the Jews and the Arabs. The Israelis, in desperation, even resorted to sending Brunner letter bombs in the hope of killing him after they realized that the chances of Syria extraditing him for trial or their chances of snatching him from his sanctuary were next to nil. The two letter bombs that Brunner received very nearly succeeded in finishing off the mass murderer, but in the end Brunner cheated death, though he lost an eye and some of the fingers of his left hand in the process. One of the most shameful aspects of the German occupation of France was the collaboration of the French police in the deportation of the nation's Jewish population. SS Hauptsturmführer Brunner and his colleagues successfully cleared the Jews out of France, largely because the French police did most of the legwork for them. Unsurprisingly, it is a fact that the French have only just started to come to terms with, and it runs contrary to the heroic resistance myth that has grown out of all proportion since the end of the war. The figures speak volumes about the level of cooperation that existed between the SS, the SD, the Sicherheitsdienst, the SS Security Service, and the French Gendarmerie. A total of 75,721 Jews were deported from France to the camps in the East, and over 80% of them were arrested by the French police. Most of the time, the Germans simply shipped them on from the French holding camps to Auschwitz and the other factories of death for special treatment. Initially, the Vichy government in unoccupied France handed over foreign Jews with alacrity to the Nazi security police, hoping to stall the deportation of French Jews. But once Dr. Brunner had arrived as Adolf Eichmann's efficiency expert to speed up the deportations in June 1943, the Vichy gendarmerie fell in with the overall Nazi plan and began arresting French nationals of the Jewish faith. In total, 80 trains left France, loaded down with human fuel for Auschwitz-Birkenau, and Brunner was personally responsible for the deportation of 23,500 of the individuals who were carried aboard them. The French police had few qualms about arresting Jewish children. The Vichy regime assisted in the deportation of over 11,000 children to the concentration camps, and Vichy leader Admiral Pierre Laval went so far as to volunteer to round up Jewish children within his zone. Laval claimed that he had no interest in what happened to the children in occupied France. He even told his ministers that he was acting out of humanity. He did not want to separate families. The French police's logic was simple. They did not want to deal with so many orphans once the adult Jews had been arrested and sent away to the camps. They included children on the transports to fill out the numbers of Jews that the SS demanded that they deport, and this meant that the police would not have to spend time and resources rounding up more adults to ship east. One horrific example is what happened on the 16th to 17th of July 1942 at the Veldiv Sports Stadium in Paris. A mass arrest of Jews had been completed, and they were being held in the stadium. Among the adults were 4,000 children. The French police insisted that the SS include these children in the roundup and deport them forthwith for execution. The SS complied, and none of the children survived Auschwitz. Alois Brunner was appointed the commandant of the Drancy internment camp in June 1943. It was a vast holding centre where the Jews of France were gathered together just outside of Paris and then shipped by train to Poland. "He would beat elderly women," recalled Drancy survivor Georges Appel of Brunner, and ordered the inmates to prepare postcards saying that all was well with them. Brunner then cynically had these postcards mailed to relatives after the inmates were on the trains to Auschwitz. "I can't let children live," remarked Brunner about the young Jews he was forced into the trains along with their parents. "They will be future terrorists," he said. In a face-to-face interview Brunner gave in 1987 with German journalist Gerd Honzik of Haut magazine in Damascus, Brunner claimed ignorance of the ultimate fate of the tens of thousands of people that he shipped to the East. He said he learned about Auschwitz, quote, "after the war from the newspapers," unquote. In Honzik's opinion, Brunner was a bitter and temperamental old man, but unrepentant regarding his massive crimes. When Brunner arrived at Drancy, the camp was disorganized, dirty, and badly run by the French police. The inmates were starving, and they had been segregated by sex, meaning that families had been forcibly split up. Brunner immediately ordered a series of drastic changes to the camp's regime that on the surface appeared to be humanitarian gestures, but in fact masked a cynical drive for calm efficiency that had earned Brunner his prominent position within Adolf Eichmann's orbit. Brunner ordered the Union Générale des Israélites de France, UGIF, an organization formed to assist French Jews, to provide provisions to the camp. Brunner ordered that a large lawn be planted with fresh vegetables, the stairways whitewashed, the rooms painted, and showers installed. He also ended the practice of splitting up families. The reason why Brunner did all of this was brutally simple. Happy prisoners were easier to deal with than starving and brutalized ones. He wanted Drancy to be a calm and well-ordered place, thereby assisting his job of getting these people onto the transports to the east with as little resistance as possible. Brunner ordered Jewish prisoners to police the camp instead of the SS, and he went to great lengths to engineer the fiction that the inmates were going to be sent to labor camps. Hence, most of the inmates boarded the evacuation trains to Auschwitz with a minimum of fuss. As well as writing letters informing their relatives that they were in good health before leaving the camp, Brunner also told the inmates to exchange their French francs for a receipt that promised them Polish currency on arrival at their destination. The money that Brunner looted from the Jews in this manner was sent to Berlin. Although Brunner's changes at Drancy appeared to many people, including the prisoners, to be positive gestures, make no mistake, Brunner was still a sadist who enjoyed torturing selected prisoners. As we have seen, in the case of the newspaper publisher Siegmund Bosel in Vienna, Brunner was not averse to personally executing people. Brunner was driven by a belief that in rounding up and evacuating the Jews to the east, he was fulfilling not only his duty to the SS, but also a higher duty to Germany. An ideological Nazi to the core, Brunner was a very different animal from the Treblinka commandant Franz Stangl, who saw himself as a policeman who was merely following his orders, and even Adolf Eichmann, who was essentially a bureaucrat once removed from the dirty business of personal murder. Even as the Allies approached Paris after the successful Normandy landings, Brunner made sure that his Jews were sent east. When Brunner and the SS evacuated Drancy on the 17th of August 1944, the train carrying his men and their records and equipment also took along 51 of the remaining Jews, as if Brunner was tying up loose ends. The camp was then abandoned to the International Red Cross, several thousand internees still languishing inside when the first American soldiers rolled up at the main gate. René Ehrmann, a 29-year-old Parisian Jew who had been arrested by the Gestapo in April 1943 and sent to Drancy, witnessed Brunner's sadistic behaviour firsthand on several horrific occasions. Quote, "Whilst at Drancy prison, there was an SS man named Brunner in charge. This man was responsible for many deaths. In my presence, I have seen him beat, kick, and throw stones at prisoners for no apparent reason apart from the fact that they were Jews." Unquote. Brunner's violent rages against the prisoners resulted in some tragic deaths. Quote, "I know that two prisoners at whom this man threw stones died as a result of the injuries they received. I called at the hospital on one occasion to see some friends, and I was told by them that prisoners admitted the day before suffering from head wounds inflicted by this man were dead. I cannot state whether they were men or women who had died. It was not an unusual occurrence to see persons severely wounded by this man's brutality." Unquote. Ehrmann was later sent to Auschwitz and finally to Bergen-Belsen, but she survived the war to testify against many of her tormentors. Whilst Brunner was commandant of Drancy, he was briefly seconded by Eichmann to the French Riviera to solve the new problem that had occurred for the SS. Brunner was extremely proactive in hunting down Jews, and he was also very successful. One of those who remembered Brunner's methods firsthand was the famous post-war French Nazi hunter Serge Klarsfeld. His father was one of Brunner's victims. The Klarsfelds had taken refuge on the French Riviera, which until September 1943 was under the occupation of Italian troops. The Italians cared little about deporting Jews, and the Klarsfelds, along with thousands of others, felt quite safe. All this changed when Benito Mussolini was deposed and Italy changed sides in September 1943. The Germans moved swiftly to occupy territories under Italian control, and Brunner was ordered into the French Riviera by Eichmann, with orders to hunt down and deport all of the Jews who were in hiding there. Historian and witness Leon Poliakov described the campaign instituted by Brunner as a human hunt, and he recalled that men were stopped in the street by SS troops and forced to expose their genitals so that the SS could see if they were circumcised. Anyone who even looked Jewish was arrested, and house-to-house searches were conducted to root out Jewish families. A huge number were imprisoned at Brunner's headquarters, the Hotel Excelsior in Nice, and some were tortured by him personally. Serge Klarsfeld's father had hidden his wife, son, and daughter behind a false panel in the back of a cupboard in their apartment. A terrified 8-year-old Serge recalled listening to the approach of Brunner's SS, the sounds of jackboots kicking in doors, orders being screamed in guttural German, and the sounds of men, women and children being beaten and brutalized next door. When the SS hammered on the Klarsfeld's front door, his father answered it. The apartment was roughly searched, and an SS soldier looked into the wardrobe where the rest of the family was hidden, but he saw only clothes hanging inside. Hardly daring to breathe, Serge Klarsfeld heard his father being roughly bundled out of the front door, and then the sounds of German trucks driving off with their human cargo under armed guard. Serge never saw his father again. He was killed at Auschwitz. Serge Klarsfeld would not forget who was responsible for his father's murder, and it was Klarsfeld who began the long process of trying to bring Alois Brunner to justice. The questions that confronted Nazi hunters after the war and decades later was how did Brunner manage to elude justice when the war ended, and how was he able to remain at liberty for such a long time afterwards? Brunner was put on trial in France in the 1950s, but the case was in absentia. He was inevitably found guilty of war crimes and sentenced to death. However, with no body to hang, the whole process was more a formality than an exercise in justice. Unless Brunner was foolish enough to step back onto French territory, he really did not have anything to worry about. By 1974, when Serge Klarsfeld first became interested in Brunner's fate, the death sentence had lapsed and Brunner was effectively a free man. Klarsfeld quickly found evidence that Brunner was then living in Syria under official government protection and using the name of his cousin, Georg Fischer. Klarsfeld put pressure on the West German and French governments to ask Syria for Brunner's extradition to stand trial for his crimes. Klarsfeld needed a fresh charge upon which basis Brunner could be tried, something new that had not been included in the original French trials in the 1950s. Klarsfeld's new charge concerned the emotive subject of children. In the summer of 1944, while Brunner was commandant of Drancy, he had ordered the mass arrest of 250 Jewish children, who were sheltering in a home run by the UGIF, the French organization that tried to keep children out of Drancy. A UGIF official virtually begged Brunner to reconsider arresting the children, but Brunner replied that they would only grow up and become terrorists. All of the children were deported, including a newborn baby, and only 32 survived the war. Brunner was convicted in absentia for the deportation of the French children by a court in France in March 2001 and sentenced yet again to life imprisonment. In the 1990s, the Germans offered a 500,000 Deutschmark reward for information about Brunner, but when documentary filmmaker Esther Shapira, who had made a program about Brunner in 1998, contacted the state attorney who was handling the Brunner case in Cologne and offered him new information about Brunner's whereabouts, she was met with a distinct lack of interest. In Shapira's opinion, the reward money was simply a public relations exercise by the German government. When she spoke to officials at the BND, the German intelligence agency, quote, "They said, of course, they could trace Brunner if they had the order to, but no German government has ever done so," unquote. In 2010, there were still outstanding arrest warrants for Brunner issued by Germany, Austria, France, Slovakia, Greece, and Poland. So when did Brunner actually die? The Simon Wiesenthal Center admitted in March 2009 that the chances were slim that he was still alive. He would have been 97 years old. Brunner was last seen alive by reliable witnesses in 1992 and reported to be still alive by journalists in 1996. In 2004, the television series Unsolved History aired an episode called Hunting Nazis. In this episode, they used facial recognition software to compare Brunner's official SS portrait with a recent photo of Georg Fischer from Damascus. The computer program gained a match of 8.1 points out of 10, the show's producers suggesting that this equated to a 95% certainty that the Georg Fischer in Syria was a very alive Brunner. Even more recently, the Brazilian police began to seriously investigate a story that Brunner had fled from Syria to their country. The Brazilians contacted the Israeli police's Interpol and Foreign Liaison section and requested a set of Brunner's fingerprints. This request was passed on to Dr. Ephraim Zuroff at the Simon Wiesenthal Center, but Zuroff could not find any prints to share with the Brazilians. In July 2007, the Austrian Justice Ministry declared that it would offer a €50,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and extradition to Austria of Alois Brunner. Thus far, the reward has remained unclaimed. New evidence of Brunner's fate emerged in 2014, when the Simon Wiesenthal Center received a tip-off from a former German intelligence agent in the Middle East that Brunner had died in Syria in 2010, aged 97 or 98 years old. But the ongoing Syrian civil war means that the information can't be verified. We will probably, therefore, never know the fate of Alois Brunner, the last concentration camp commandant.